Hello, and welcome. Do you remember in school, whenever you would question the teacher and they never seemed to have the answer? They'd just advise you to consult the textbook. Well, I used to question teachers all the time just to be difficult. I'd nudge the guy next to me and say, hey, watch this. Because I just wanted to test them. Not necessarily test their knowledge in terms of knowing the text, but hypotheticals. If such and such a situation occurred, how could we then apply this knowledge and this data? Would it be practical? Or would it be pointless? Just to get them thinking outside the box. Get them out of their comfort zone and just get them to see that there are shades of grey. Perish the thought. You ever hear this line as a man? You need therapy. Just go see a therapist. It'll help you. It'll be good for you. Go on. Just get some therapy, mate. Just for some peace of mind. Well, what if therapy is actually harmful? What if it's especially damaging to males? What if it causes long-term harm? What if it increases markedly the incidence of suicidality among certain men, depending on their life history and depending on the circumstances? What if it actually leads to more acts of self-harming and violence, especially among different demographics, such as a prison population, or those in outpatient mental health care? What if we're actually hurting instead of helping? What if that difficult kid at the back of the class who keeps putting his hand up actually has a point? Because stepping into a room full of therapists, it can be like stepping into that movie, Idiocracy. There's a lot of talking heads with nothing to say. How many of these so-called specialists are aware of the damage that they do? Or aware of the lack of research or even discussion on the issue of harm inflicted by therapy? How many people in general are aware of the lack of accountability of therapists and of psychologists and so on in relation to this? How many mental health professionals are speaking out on this issue as opposed to just patting each other on the back? I mean, they're all Cape Crusaders, aren't they? Talking to a shrink is like talking to Batman. They seem to all operate under the veil of darkness. It's just patently unfair. You can't just expect clients to speak up if or when something goes wrong during therapy. Because who are they going to talk to? Wait, what? You went to a therapist? Oh, mate, there must be something wrong with you. So, it still carries a stigma, especially for a man. Who wants to associate with a man who may have mental issues? Well, he might be dangerous. Worse still, he might be a loser. So, realistically, it's going to affect everything. If a man wants to jeopardize his career, then a surefire way to do that is just to say, outright, he's receiving therapy. I've seen it happen. A man does that, he just puts a big question mark over himself. He's seen his damaged goods. If things go wrong, who's going to believe the client side of things? My therapist was unprofessional. Oh yeah? Prove it. Therapy was unhelpful? No, you just didn't apply the steps correctly. You failed the process. The process didn't fail you. It wasn't damaging. Don't be silly. It's all in your head, mate. You know what you need? You just need more therapy. And so on it goes. I like that movie, American History X. I like the scene in it. After Derek Vinyard. He's been raped in jail. He's in a really bad way at this point. He gets a visit from his prior school principal. And that character of the principal, I thought he was an amazing character. I wish they'd actually focused more on him or done a spin-off with just that character. Because he was good value. Because you could see, he was actively involved in the community at a ground level. He was obviously engaged with at-risk youth, disaffected youth. And you could see he was cooperating with the authorities and in an advisory capacity, in regards to all the gang networks in the area. So he most likely came up in that environment himself. And now you could see he was actively promoting change. Yeah, there's another scene in there where Derek's younger brother, Danny. Danny comes into the principal's office, after playing up. He starts putting on the hard man act. He says, what, you don't think I could handle it out there? The principal says no. He says, I think the streets would kill you. Because he could see where Danny was heading. A lot of young men, they can't see two steps ahead of themselves in that regard. I've known a lot of young men in the same boat. And the principal could see just how precarious Danny's life was at that point. That was just one mistake away from a life sentence or a death sentence. And he was right. Anyway, you see in the movie, after Derek is attacked, and the principal, he asks Derek the question. He says, has anything you've done up to this point made your life better? It's a pretty simple question. But when you find yourself in what you might call a rabbit hole moment, that simple little question, it fucking hits home. And that's what we need to be asking. I mean, if you were a therapist, and your client was self-harming, either in session or in private, if he was talking about suicide, about hurting himself, or screaming, yelling, if he was saying in session or calling you, telling you that he can't hold it together, or if he questioned the treatment approach being used, if he stated that it was actually, rather painful, dredging up all these memories of abuse and so on. And all the while you, the therapist, keeps asking him to spill his guts, using EMDR, using visualization exercises. I mean, it's fairly cut and dry. That's gross negligence. But what happens? The client, he just typically just discontinues therapy. Meanwhile, their whole life starts crumbling down around them. But, see no evil, hear no evil. A therapist, they don't want to see or hear that what they're doing is potentially damaging, or even reflect on the hurt that they've created. I've heard story after story about therapists crossing the line into reckless and very questionable behavior. The therapist-client relationship can be extremely toxic and abusive, especially with female therapists and male clients. It's kind of like being in the mafia, really, or the prison environment. Snitches get stitches. No snitching. It's all very political. I mean, it's not very mature or conducive to progress when esteemed academics and practitioners just stick their fingers in the ears like a 5-year-old when you question the efficacy of a particular model or question a particular test or approach, is it? But that's what they do. The question first and foremost that needs to be asked is what is damage? Because sometimes it can be readily apparent, but other times there may be improvement. But it's also possible that that client would have responded more effectively or more quickly to a different form of therapy. And it's also possible that because of that delay, there may have been personal or professional consequences as a result. And other times, therapy may have put the brakes on that client falling apart, or it may just slow down the inevitable. So there's a lot of variables, but no research or discussion is being had around any of this. I certainly don't see any therapists discussing this. It must be hard being perfect. It's like that movie, Sling Blade. Everyone is trying to figure out why the lawnmower won't work. It's just packed up. It won't start. Nobody can figure out why it won't start. And the guy is supposedly mentally slower than the rest of them, who just got out of the psychiatric hospital. He has a look in the tank and he says, there's no gas in it. Sometimes the answers can be the simplest ones. Now, I don't know. How about asking the client how they are feeling about therapy and how they're feeling about the process overall? Asking for their feedback, if they have any concerns. Ask for it in writing. Let them go away and really think about it and encourage them to be as honest and critical as they possibly can be. Then you can take that and you can compare it with other clients who may share similar issues, you know, who come from similar backgrounds and so on. And you can start getting a picture of what approaches work and what doesn't work, or who is on track, who is tracking well, and who isn't. I mean, because otherwise you're just flying blind. I mean, how else can you effectively know? And ideally, that feedback, it should be referred to a third party, you know, a team of mental health professionals who can track and assess. And you can keep confidentiality, that's fine. But the feedback from the client, it can be nameless, you know. But they could start mapping patterns, start building trends, algorithms, and can start to get an idea of when clients are potentially going off the rails. In therapy, it sucks. It's painful. It's hard work. It's just this, you know, tangled web of maladaptive patterns that need to be challenged and confronted head on. You know, it's what we call life traps. The kids today like to call them copes, but you know, it's a tad more complicated than that, unfortunately. You know, they're long-standing negative and dysfunctional patterns of thought, so, you know, beliefs, and maladaptive strategies that a person relies on. And it influences that person's perception, their perception of the world, and the perception of other people. And that's a template for their trajectory, essentially. It's these negative thoughts and strategies that play out in avoidant behaviours and compensatory behaviours and so on. And they've generally been in place for a very long time, and they keep getting perpetuated through behaviours, so you know, they're stubborn little buggers. But the more we dig into them, the more adaptive these negative behaviours and these patterns and these ways of thinking become. Yeah? You just poked a hole in that behaviour or belief. Oh well, I'll just reframe it to mean this instead. There, see? I've built my walls back up again, so now I'm safe and my argument still holds validity. Well, often it doesn't. You know, often the world isn't just black and white. And often there's more colours to the rainbow. So, yeah, we're all human beings. We all want simple, quick answers to even the most complex questions. But for most people, generalities will do just fine. But the only problem is we're talking about your health. We're talking about your life, no one else's. So we need to be sure that you're in a good place, because living in a perpetual negative state, it's obviously not good for your health. And you know, man can just end up going in circles. So I mean, the goal, it should be to have the client identify these maladaptive beliefs, all these behaviours and these strategies, and get them to understand the patterns, and then to reach a point of self-awareness so they can readily identify those patterns, you know, when and if they're occurring. And then the client, he moves towards replacing all the negative and self-limiting thoughts and beliefs with better, healthier ones. Instead of the meatball sub with extra cheese, he can have the salad instead. Now, shit analogy, but you get what I mean. But all of that, it takes investment on both sides. And the right balance, it needs to be struck between self-care and self-analysis. So you can't just dive in. You can't just dive in and be an emotional daredevil ripping up old wounds. That's not going to end well for anyone. It really is astonishing, the lack of caution and the lack of care that many therapists have for their clients. They just go all in, you know, right from the get-go. It's negligent. It can be very harmful. I mean, the thing is, if you posed this question to most therapists, you know, the question being, how do you know if your client is going off the rails? How do you know when they're getting worse? Most therapists, they wouldn't know how to answer that question. I mean, yeah, sure, they might say, well, the client is self-harming or self-medicating and so on. Well, fair enough, but those could certainly be signs to look out for. Yeah, that's a given. But how do you know it's not the therapy itself that's causing this? Now, what's your process to determine or differentiate that? Because maybe asking someone to describe in graphic detail the sexual abuse they suffered as a child in the first few sessions might not be the best approach. You know, especially if that client has a history of self-harming. So, and you can take that, you can apply that to any therapeutic model. And all the warning signs that might be there, you know? but you would be lucky if the client could articulate exactly what is going on with them at any given time. And they most likely won't be able to. Now, all they know is that something is boiling up inside of them. You know, that they don't feel safe, that now their interpersonal relationships are being affected, and their ability to function at work or wherever is now impaired. And they may be lashing out and so on. The list goes on. But if you're not asking for their input, if you're not checking in with them every step of the way and empowering them and encouraging them, instead just keep pushing the hardline approach by ripping up all the old traumas with no thought to self-care or any of the follow-on consequences, then guess what role you have now stepped into? They're the victim and you're the... It starts with a asshole would also work. I mean, how do you know? Like, how do you know if there's a fire in an office building? You know, it would be fairly obvious, right? But what if they skimped on the health and safety bill and there's no alarm system in place? Well, by the time you figure it out, it might be too late. You know, without an effective alarm system, things can end very badly. And the alarm is one thing, but there needs to be an intervention framework in place. You know, once someone has been identified as at risk. Now, an athlete is not going to win every race. Now, a boxer is not going to win every fight. And not every client is going to pull through okay. You ask a therapist to give you a ballpark figure of how many clients they think might get worse during the course of therapy. And you would be lucky if they would say even one, let alone give you a percentage. Yeah, there's a lot of external factors at play, along with client history, along with lack of support networks, and so on. But often none of these are even taken into consideration by a therapist. Now, they may not even pose the question before jumping into all the juicy historical trauma. So often there's no attention paid to self-care. Because therapists are seemingly not only perfect, but they're Teflon. I mean, why would a therapist need client feedback and structured interventions if they're just so damn good at their job, right? But they need to be held to account and to be given, you know, constructive feedback at every opportunity. Otherwise, we're just playing with fire. And yeah, you know, like with anything, I mean, you can mitigate the risk. You can listen to the man in front of you, instead of just talking at him. You can engage with curiosity in order to, you know, understand his experience, to understand his perspective, as opposed to just shutting him down and just shaming him or dismissing him. You know, it could be that the treatment that's ineffective, it could be that. The treatment isn't working, or it could be the therapist. It could be both. It could be a whole wide variety of issues with the client and with their immediate environment that, you know, may not have been identified. But we can't know unless we discuss it, unless we identify it. But it goes right up the ladder. You know, leading bodies in the psychology field, they're not interested in discussion around problematic treatments or approaches. It's the same with therapists. See no evil, hear no evil. You know, what a wonderful bubble to live in. Never to be held account for your actions or even questioned on your methodology. It must be a wonderful fantasy land of roses and rainbows. And as human beings, I mean, we enter every situation and every interaction on a conscious and a subconscious level. And therapists, just like everyone else, and they carry their own subconscious bias into sessions with clients. Yet many would never admit this. I mean, you could look at a man walking down the street, and you could see him, he's yelling at the sun, he's screaming about UFOs. Now, he might have just been abducted by aliens, but it may be more likely that he has mental issues. And you could look at that man, you most likely think, well, probably schizophrenic. Or he's on a very bad high, maybe he's having a psychotic break, you know, it happens. So whatever it is, we would ascertain something about his behaviour at that given moment in time. So accurately or inaccurately, We've recognised certain behaviours and we've diagnosed that man on the basis of said behaviours. But it's just a diagnosis. Now, from that moment on, we need to get our heads out of the diagnostic manual and start thinking critically. Okay? And start thinking with a good dose of common sense about how we can help this man. And that's what's missing. Critical reasoning. Critical thinking. Common fucking sense. A human had a stream or a video recently where he stated that, and I'm paraphrasing, that words mean something different to a woman than they do to a man. It was something along those lines, and it's true. Huh? And that's a key issue that's never addressed. And a female therapist, they work within that lens. Now, anything you say to her, the words will be reframed in her head like a game of Scrabble. Yeah, women interpret the words and the information differently, and then they reframe them in a manner that's comfortable or acceptable to them. That is something that men have real trouble reconciling. Yeah, which makes sense. As humans, we see everything through the frame of our own experience, and we typically expect others to see the world as we do, but women see things in a markedly different way to men. You know, as men, we keep persisting in the belief that women think like we do. They don't. So men need to be very careful in what they disclose to women. You know, as often, things can be taken the wrong way. Because women will never understand men. Now, all you're going to hit is a brick wall trying to reach them. And they don't care about the data. They don't care about your experience. They'll simply project onto you that you've misinterpreted things. It's termed countering. It's an interrogation tactic. They'll turn it back on you. They'll start questioning the validity of your memory. And they'll critique your perception of the world and of people in general. And it happens all the time in therapy, and it's damaging. It just seems just par for the course. It's common practice. Most therapists, they aren't even aware that they're engaging in it. And that's one of the most damaging things. They're not even aware that they're doing it. You know, that they're actually causing this harm. When this behavior goes unaddressed, when it goes unchecked, which it often does, it systematically breaks a person down. You know, they end up, they can't be honest with themselves. You know? They can't live authentically or even trust their own instincts or trust their own thoughts anymore. It leads to a lot of bad places. A lot of bad behaviours. So what I'm suggesting here is implementing a structured framework where the approach is one of compassionate curiosity with the client and where client feedback is actively encouraged and where that feedback should work as a diagnostic compass for every session. Now, in a framework where therapists are held to account, where the validity and safety of methodologies or approaches are questioned. You know, where we question this culture or this belief that therapy is automatically good for you and is the answer. You know, and where if the client ends up worse off, that it's not all on them. You know, and that we start looking at the big picture. You know, and I'm recommending having a process in place where governing or leading bodies in the mental health field actually start holding up a mirror to themselves and start asking some hard questions instead of just patting themselves on the back. I mean, you can look at like child custody cases. You can look at domestic violence cases, false rape, you know, where allegations have only been made, where there's no evidence to back them up. The man gets thrown in the room with the therapist and he gets subjected to all manner of testing. It's guesswork at best. And they're not looking at the man in front of them. And more often than not, they're running off a perceived notion of who he is at best. Or they're letting their subjective bias dictate their analysis, at worst. But apparently there's no room for discussion on any of this in the mental health field. It's all just running off blind trust and the expectation that they know best. But what if therapy is damaging? What if it does more harm than good? What if?